Forces in Europe and Air Forces Africa be an opportunity to, quote, hone skills, fine-tune interoperability, nurture key relationships, and acclimate to the inherent challenges posed by fighting in the Arctic's extreme conditions. Moscow has objected to what's happening in the Barents Sea and over its neighbor countries, calling Arctic challenge, quote, illogical and harmful, saying there are no issues in the North that require a military solution, nor issues that require outside intervention. John Helmer is a journalist and author who's spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. The principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears, Helmer has, too, been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism, and served as advisor to governments at their highest levels. Among his many book titles are Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Jackal's Wedding, American Power, Arab Revolt, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, and his latest, Australian Fascism, How It Destroyed the Courts. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
Well, it's always my pleasure. You know that. Well, John, now your latest article out just hours ago, annexation of Kharkov, Ukraine to shrink as Russia responds to cross-border attacks. It's arguing the U.S.-NATO strategy is and always has been to destroy Russia on the Ukrainian battlefield, and that, well, it seems that the Russian response is changing. Now, I know that there's debate within Russia about how to deal with the war and which path to follow, and you've written about this in this article, the debate going on in the Duma, in the press, everywhere in Russia, unlike in Canada and the United States. Can you lead us into your article and what the positions are in Russia right now regarding Ukraine?
As you said, Chris, there's a big variety of Russian positions. And as you also said, Russia's the only working democracy that has a public debate over what the aims of the war should be. If I could dramatize it, because this is the way it's been, the former president of Russia, Dmitry Medvedev, deputy head of the Security Council, a kind of advisory collection of ministers in the Kremlin, said last week, Ukraine will disappear. And he said, now it's time, I'm quoting, now it's time to say how Ukraine will disappear, and also what will then be the risk of resumption of the war in Europe and in the rest of the world. This will depend on which path the process of disintegration takes. Now, what he's saying there, it hasn't been discussed in the Western press, as far as I can tell, is first, Ukraine will disappear. Second, how and why depends in several different ways. First of all, the why is that the outcome of this war may not, cannot, must not, from Russian point of view, pose a threat to resumption of war or continuation of war against Russia. So any notion that people in the West may have that there's a chance of a ceasefire, a frozen conflict, forget it. It's out from a Russian point of view, because this war is being fought to defend Russia against this war and in future wars, short term, medium term, long term. Now, what exactly that means is being debated all over the Russian press in Moscow. And Mr. Prigozhin, who commands the Wagner private army, is literally going round the country advertising his views. He was in Vladivostok 2 days ago. We won't discuss Prigozhin's views because they're simply one of many about how to define the Russian war aim. But, and it's a huge but, President Putin said on Tuesday afternoon, after the Ukrainian drones had landed in Moscow, and I'll just quote what he said and tried to explain it. Quotes, we all had to respond by launching the special military operation. We are striking at the territory of Ukraine, but with long-range precision weapons at military infrastructure facilities only, emphasize that word, only, either at ammunition or fuel and lubricants warehouses used for combat operations. We have talked about the possibility of striking at decision-making centers. Of course, the headquarters of the Ukrainian military intelligence is one of them, and a strike at this target was carried out 2 or 3 days ago. Now, what does that mean? It means that President Putin is still defining the war aim as limited to military infrastructure facilities only. In other words, the objective is to demilitarize the Ukraine fully, finally, all over the country. And that's what's happening at the moment. We talked about the electric war in past broadcasts. In the last few days, you've seen massive attacks in the west of the Ukraine, Ms. Freeland's Galician region, at warehouses, ammunition storages, fuel dumps, and every airfield in the Ukraine has been destroyed so that no Ukrainian F-16 can take off in that country. So there is a huge gap between the very limited military-only objective President Putin proposed and emphasized on Tuesday, and the Ukraine will cease to exist that former President Medvedev explained or declared last week.
Medvedev, is he just beating his chest? Or, I mean, you write that this comes, that his statements come following, quote, intensification of artillery, rocket, and drone attacks on Russian cities, including Moscow. So is he just coming out and saying something for public consumption and playing the tough guy? Or does this signal a change of course in the way Moscow is going to pursue and continue the so-called special operations?
In war, on both sides, a lot of people who've got chests have been beating them. Mm. But it's a vain operation. It's not what professional military men do. Retired military men on podcasts in the United States do a lot of chest beating, and people in the State Department, like Miss Newland, beat that rather expanding chest of hers.
Let's not get personal here. No,
well,
but I mean,
you asked the question.
Not about Ms. Newland's growing breast, but I mean, how
say Bison, beating her chest, an expanding chest, and yeah. That chest has been expanded to include her most recent statement that we are working on the offensive with the Ukrainians. She, you know, among the chest expanders she's offered have been bombing the Nord Stream 2 well in advance of that event. And now let's see if she's as credible as she was about destroying the Nord Stream, a Ukrainian counteroffensive. That's what I mean by chest beating. And it's a vain effort.
Well, she's not alone in that. Ursula von der Leyen of the European Commission, she's calling for long-range weapons. I see just today she says she's repeating the everything, you know, we're there to back Ukraine till the end for as long as it takes. The immediate need, you know it, she says, is the military assistance to sustain the efforts of the Ukrainian armed forces, and this is why we have just proposed the Ammunition Production Act. So it doesn't seem like Europe is wavering, or at least the way she's beating her chest. But yeah. I'm still more interested, though, if Medvedev is who is he representing? Or is this a signal that there's going to be a change in tactics on the Russian side?
Well, it's not vain when the Deputy Secretary of the Security Council, a principal security, military strategy, political strategy collective at the top of the Russian leadership says what he said. What he's emphasizing is widely felt in public, among the Russian public, that the long-term defense of Russia requires that the Ukraine cannot be allowed to do this again. No pause, no ceasefire. Demilitarization. It's a definition of what demilitarization means. And it means, if you unpack what Medvedev had to say, several scenarios. and we've talked about on this program before, involving the expansion westward of those regions, the Russian regions of the Ukraine, the Novorussian regions of the Ukraine, from the four that presently have acceded to Russia to an eight. The eight would include Odessa in the south, Nikolaev in the south, Dnipropetrovsk in the middle, and Kharkov in the north. The argument now that the Ukrainian drone, let's call it the US-Ukrainian drone attacks on Russia, the argument that those attacks have provoked is how far further westward should we the Russian side, go to absorb and defend and secure the regions from which these drones are fired. And that has led to the governor of Belgorod region, Governor Gladkov, proposing that Belgorod absorb the Kharkov region from which the artillery shelling of Belgorod has taken place. That's one part of the future. The second part is that at the river, the Dnieper River, the Russian, even the most ambitious Russian definition of long-term security stops, and you have a demilitarized zone, no weapons with long range of the kind that Ms. von der Leyen proposes, or that the US has already supplied, or that the British have supplied, or the French have supplied. No long-range missile can be deployed in longer range. The new weapons brought in will be the width of that demilitarized zone. How much of Ukrainian territory is left then? Well, we've talked about it on this program months ago. Medvedev surfaced it last week. That brings us to Ms. Freeland region of Galicia. That's where her grandfather came from. That's where the Germans murdered all the Jews, Gypsies, Slavs, and everybody else they could lay their hands on to absorb the Galician region, Lvov to Krakow, Poland, into what was intended to be a new part of Poland. We are talking about the elimination of the capacity of this territory, a platform for the United States and its allies, the NATO alliance, plus all the others, Japan, Australia, and so forth, to attack and aim to destroy Russia. Okay? That's to be eliminated. Okay? Therefore, what I've provided as a sample of Russian views in response to the drone attacks in that piece. So people can read not me, but them, because they're Russians. And you don't need me to rehash what they're saying. You can just read it for yourself. Okay? But what we're talking about then is the extension of Novorossiya, the reformation of Western Russia with eight regions, four more than have already been exceeded. Then a buffer zone, a no man's land, Medvedev called it, a demilitarized zone, as we would call it if we were in Korea or in other places of the world. And that would leave Galicia, the western regions, which are ethnically Hungarian in the case of Transcarpathia, and ethnically different around Lvov, which has a special relationship with Poland. What Medvedev said was, and he didn't mention Poland, he didn't mention Romania, and he didn't mention Hungary, but he meant them. They can fight over the remains of the west of the Ukraine to protect their own ethnic speakers. And that's a particular problem for Prime Minister Orbán and the Hungarian government and the majority of Hungarians, who feel very strongly that their ethnic relatives in Transcarpathia on the Ukrainian border have been discriminated against, sent to the front, lost their houses, and generally repressed and destroyed as an ethnic group in that part of the Ukraine. What the Russians are saying is that that's for you folks to fight over, not us. But that pushes the Ukraine territory into the waiting arms of Romania, Hungary, and Poland, with a future that they can settle among themselves. And they've been trying to settle that unsuccessfully for several hundred years now.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Helmer. John is a journalist and author. He's spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. He's too been a professor of political science, sociology, journalism, and served as advisor to governments at the highest levels. Among his many book titles are Scripple in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Jackal's Wedding, American Power, Arab Revolt, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, and his latest is Australian Fascism, How It Destroyed the Courts. Well, John, so I'm still wondering if this represents a new phase or a different phase in the special operation. The West has said from the beginning in the presses that this whole thing is about expansion and taking territory, a new imperium, a restoration of the former Soviet lands by evil Putin, etc. Doesn't this sort of bear them out, this annexation push?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, Chris, for the simple reason. I try to be simple and brief here.
Oh, please. That's as much as I can bear.
Okay. Mr. Simple, Mr. Brief. Okay. Who moved first? The fact is that the Ukrainian territory is being used and has been used, certainly since 2014, but before that, for the expansion of NATO, the NATO alliance, and in particular the United States, to the borders of Russia. That has threatened Russia's survival. That's why we are now in a war, we meaning the Russian side versus the US side, a war between Russia and the United States for the survival of Russia, not the survival of the United States. So the question then becomes, what's negotiable for the long-term security of Russia from attack by all of these elements? Russia offered a non-aggression security treaty to the United States and then to the NATO alliance on December the 17th, 2021. It offered a bunch of provisions, which we've talked about on the broadcast. We've written it down. We've attempted to explain that was the peace deal then. But it also involved the rollback of the NATO threat to the Russian border, missile threat, nuclear threat, conventional army threat, rollback to the year 1997. And that in that year, Poland and Romania and Hungary were not members of NATO. So their future defense and security for them would have to be negotiated too. But that peace proposal was rejected out of hand, never discussed. Never discussed in the print.
Well, the opposite has happened since then. We've seen Finland come in and Sweden, depending on which way Erdogan and Turkey goes, it might jump in as well. Both are expressing support for Ukraine and damning Russia.
Exactly so. So that brings us to the future. And within, we are now approaching the beginning of June. Summer in the Northern Hemisphere means several things. Bad things, negative things, very threatening things are going to happen in the beginning in the first half of June and extending through the month. In the first place, the countries you've just mentioned, the Arctic Challenge, a massive air exercise within missile flying distance of St. Petersburg. That's to start, if I'm not mistaken, June 5th. And to add to the combination of aircraft involved, the U.S. has sent the USSS, the aircraft carrier Gerald Ford, with 90 aircraft aboard. That was not scheduled to be involved in this exercise. It now is. That's in the north of Russia. In the center of Russia, you have a major exercise, Air Defender 23. That's the biggest air exercise of NATO since the founding of the alliance. That's going to fly a lot of aircraft at Russia, starting June 12th. In the south, we have other exercises, and we have a major military conflict brewing in the Balkans between Serbia and Kosovo. So you've got troublemaking and major new military threats which Russia perceives to be direct border threats or direct threats to its allies, south, center, north. That's what's happening in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I'm looking at the news release from the U.S. Air Forces in Europe, and they say that Arctic Challenge begins on May 28th and runs through June 9th. And I said off the top that I quoted them saying that part of the purpose was to operate in the challenging Arctic conditions. And I had to wonder, well, why choose summer then to do this? How is Russia responding to this now? We saw what happened with the Nord Stream, where there was a war exercises in the oceans near the pipeline, where the Nord Stream 2 pipeline ran. And then a month later, there was the explosion. Everybody knows about Seymour Hersh and how he said those exercises were used as cover.
Yes.
Now, is there a threat that these exercises, Arctic Challenge or the land-based ones, could be used similarly? And is that how Russia is receiving the news of
these
exercises?
Yes, indeed. Exactly so, Chris. Exactly so. Because it's happened before in the Baltic, when the explosive that blew up the Nord Stream was planted during and under cover of Baltops 22 last year in June, a year ago. And then the explosion happens September 26, because that's been rehearsed before, because air ambush was rehearsed 2 weeks ago when aircraft, two fixed-wing Russian Su-34s and two Mi-8 helicopters were shot down over Bryansk region. The rehearsals are taking place as we speak. The Russian reaction has been to remove all Ukrainian airfields from active operation so that there is no possibility that an F-16 with an alleged Ukrainian passport holder in the front of the aircraft, in the cockpit, could possibly fly out of the Ukraine. If it happens that under cover of the exercise, a camouflaged U.S., Polish, or other NATO F-16 attacks, ambushes, Russian aircraft, but pretending to be Ukrainian, that's exactly what's been rehearsed before, and it's got to be a very considerable threat to the Russian side, to the Belarus side, because their territories are also under threat. And that's what's about to happen, a level of air threat to the Russian side, which is unprecedented in NATO size. And just bear in mind, it's not one or two little F-16s flying at a Russian. It involves, they can only operate with coordination from NATO and US AWACS aircraft, air control command, electronic surveillance and electronic interference aircraft in support, plus fuel tankers, and all of that aerial stuff, entirely US or NATO, has to be based either in Germany, Romania, Italy, Turkey, in lots of places. And it's going to be circling, coming up from the south across the Black Sea to Romania, which has been practiced for weeks and months now, or coming eastward from German air bases and from Polish air bases. So you've got a massive change in the aerospace battlefield in the coming days. I mean days, only a few more days, and then we'll see what's cooking.
Well, you mentioned the Gerald Ford aircraft carrier group being added at the last minute. So what is the relevance of that, do you think?
The fair answer would be, I don't know for sure. But when you add a U.S. aircraft carrier that left Norfolk, Virginia on May the 3rd with a destination in the Mediterranean to replace U.S. aircraft carrier USS George H.W. Bush, and then you change its destination to Oslo, and then you add it to this exercise where no NATO or Swedish or Finnish press or Norwegian press release has announced this in advance, then you've got a change of mind on the U.S. Navy side, And that's strategic in the way it's being organized. What does that look like? It looks like an attempt to draw significant Russian naval and air defense and missile defense northward out of the central sector. It's a diversion, a diversionary threat of attack to draw away Russian force, which would be concentrated on the central battlefield, the battlefield of Air Defender and the Ukrainian battlefield, and thereby dilute and weaken the Russians in the middle of that geography. That's what it looks like to me, but I could be profoundly wrong.
Yeah, well, we're not experts in this military matters. And it seems unlikely to me, though, that even if Moscow thought that an attack, a false F-16 attack pretending to be Ukraine, actually emanated from some NATO country or even that or the Gerald Ford, that they would strike back with one of their hypersonic missiles or anything like that. I can't imagine they would start shooting at the Ford.
You're right. The Gerald Ford, like the president himself, is a sitting duck. He's a sitting duck because, as you just said, Chris, the hypersonic Kinjal has proven to be effective against the most advanced U.S. air defense, which is the Patriot missile batteries sitting in the Ukraine. Does the Gerald Ford have a better air defense than the Patriot? No, it doesn't. Is there an effective U.S. air defense against the Kinjals? No, there are not. So what's the Gerald Ford doing there? Answer, the 90 aircraft on the deck, plus all the other NATO aircraft, are designed to pose a kind of threat to which there must be a comparable Russian response. And that draws away aircraft, missile batteries and all sorts of other stuff, including electronic warfare, to the north, away from the central sector. The central sector is where another one of these Ukrainian symbolic attacks, an F-16 that triumphs over a Russian aircraft, would be staged. This is staging. It's PR. It's not counteroffensive. It's staging like you drop a couple of drones on the top of the Senate roof in the Kremlin, as happened a couple of weeks back, or you drop another 8 drones in the Moscow suburbs and city this week. These are symbolic pinpricks attempting to show the capacity of the Ukraine to wage a counteroffensive, which it cannot do.
Well, John, if you're willing to sit longer with me, we're out of time for this shorter version. So I would thank again Stavroula Pabst and remind of her article, Ukraine's Future Lies in the Great Reset, which is available at unlimitedhangout.com. And you can go and read that there. John, are you willing to continue?
Sure.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on again. And you can go to Dances with Bears, johnhelmer.net, to see John's other work. Thanks also to Stavroula Pabst, her article, Ukraine's Future Lies in the Great Reset, over there at unlimitedhangout.com. Thanks a lot, John, for coming on again, eh?
Thank you very much, Chris.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
For 40 years, the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, a.k.a. SFPIRG, has been helping students build communities at SFU. Campus organizations like Out on Campus and Embark developed out-of-action groups at SFPIRG. Action groups are one of the ways that student activists can take action for change. Visit us at www.sfpirg.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about starting your own action group today.
Mm-hmm. Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.